Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Fan Experience TV. We're on episode 74. As always, I am your host, Mike Kados. Alongside me is my co-host, Rick Molina. Rick, how are we doing?
Doing well, man. The week is off to a good start. We had some great sporting events this weekend. Hideki Matsuyama winning the Masters. Mm-hmm. We had some nice baseball going on this weekend. Mets, Yankees, and all over MLB. We had all these mock drafts going on everywhere. Julian Edelman retiring. So it was a great sports weekend as it is, man. So we can go anywhere you want. I guess we can start with Edelman retiring. Kind of a surprise because you figure he's a guy who's just like tough as nails, always durable, dependable, and retiring. And, you know, when I saw that, I was like, wow, man. I mean, that Patriot dynasty coming down, like little by little, that the empire is crumbling. The conversation, and I wanted to get into this with you, is he a Hall of Famer? And 12 seasons in the NFL, I think he won 3 Super Bowls or whatever it is. Is Julian Edelman a Hall of MVP? Uh-huh. I got to say that he is, man. He's just one of those – he was clutch players in those spots. The numbers – are there, and I think he's a Hall of Famer. I think him and Brady and Gronk,
I agree.
Hall of Famers. And your I just want to hear what your thoughts are on that.
I agree. I mean, what do you know, what is one of the things you look at as far as, I mean, you have people that are in the Hall of Fame that never won Super Bowls. Right. And this guy has sat there and won 3, and he's obviously been a, you know, big part of those teams and those Super Bowl winning teams. Mainly because he was also an MVP in one of those, which wide receivers don't really get that too often. It's usually reserved for the quarterback, unless it's something absolutely astronomical when it comes to that. How do you keep him out is the question. What can you say he doesn't – how does he not actually apply to actually be into the Hall of Fame? So I think you have to keep him out. But it's going to be prove why he doesn't deserve the spot.
Exactly.
And I think that's a hard thing to prove.
I'm with you on that. The numbers, you know, today on Colin Cowherd's show, I don't know if you heard it, but he was comparing his numbers to Calvin Johnson's, and they were close, except the fact except that Edelman's won Super Bowls and he's won a Super Bowl MVP. So I don't see how you keep the guy out. Maybe 5 years from now, as time passes, the stats bear themselves out, but I don't know how you keep him out. I think the guy's a Hall of Famer. Is he a first ballot Hall of Famer? I don't know if he's a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Probably not, but he'll get in there.
But he'll get in. He deserves to get in the Hall of Fame, absolutely. And he's one of the players of this era. You think of the Patriots, you think of all those championships, you think of Julian Edelman.
You know? Now let's think about this. Hypothetically, if Julian Edelman does not get into the Hall of Fame,
okay,
right?
Yeah.
But Calvin Johnson got into the Hall of Fame with a very limited career. How bad is Matthew Stafford for not winning a Super Bowl if you have people like Julian Edelman not getting in the Hall of Fame and Stafford was blessed with Calvin Johnson on his team and couldn't do anything?
You're right.
You know, so that's I think just for that reason alone, they need to just push Edelman through. To save face for Stafford and Detroit and whatever.
Yeah, but look, Megatron was something else, right? He was 6'6". He was a beast. I mean, the guy. The sad thing is he's known for the catch that wasn't a catch. It's not Edelman's known for that catch against the Falcons in the Super Bowl. And Megatron's known for a ball that he caught in the middle of the season that he put on the floor that didn't become a catch because he didn't control the catch.
Yeah.
So, and that's tough. But, again, I don't think there's any denying it. Julian Edelman's a Hall of Famer. Is he a first ballot Hall of Famer? No. But I think he gets in. He deserves to get in. The guy's had a hell of a career. Guy was he was a quarterback in college.
Yep, quarterback,
seventh round pick. Mm-hmm. You know, those are the stories that get in, man, and he's gonna get in. So congratulations to him on a great career, and wish him well. He's 34, young guy, probably gonna do some TV. Hopefully, he saved his money, live a good life.
Rob Gronkowski thinks there's a 69% chance that he's gonna sign with the Bucks.
Well, it's funny. I was reading.
Ian
Rappaport was talking about his knee injury. It was pretty bad. And that's why he's calling it quits.
That's why he's calling it quits. Yeah.
But no, I don't see him. Maybe he's a coach. You don't know.
As a coach, you could see that.
Yeah. So,
you know,
Belichick hire.
In some way, shape, or form, he'll keep tabs with Brady and Gronk over there, I'm sure. But I don't think he's going to be playing professional football.
No.
Speaking of football,
The
Rock, the XFL's new owner, he is talking about merging like championship games and having the XFL play the CFL.
Yeah.
And that would be interesting.
Yeah.
That would be fun to see.
It's funny. When I read that, the first thing I was thinking, he's kind of bringing wrestling into football.
It's like Raw versus SmackDown.
Exactly. Right? The XFL, the CFL champions. And I was like, that's exactly what it is. Or even like the old days in the 80s. You had like the NWA stars wrestling the AWA stars or whatever. And that's when that's kind of the concept that he's bringing. Mm-hmm. And I like it. I mean, I like the idea.
I mean, it's a proven concept. I mean,
yeah, it works.
If it works.
But that's the great thing about having somebody like The Rock be an owner of one of these leagues is that you can bring more attention. You can bring more fans to the game and grow the game. And I think that'd be a tremendous idea. If you can have the XFL and the CFL champions play, I think that'd be great. It'd be something different, something in the spring or whatever they play. I think it'd be awesome.
Instead of King of the Ring, King of the Gridiron.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah.
And have him go, if you smell. You know,
I don't think he's going to be doing that. I'm going to go out on a limb and say he's probably not going to do that.
But what they were talking about was this might be an XFL-CFL merger.
Mm-hmm. I think it's going to start with the championship games. And then I guess they'll see how that goes. But yeah, I mean, I guess anything goes. If you really want to try and compete and make it mainstream and make it this spring league when NFL is not being played,
right?
You gotta look at every single avenue you can. And I think it would be fun for football fans.
Yeah.
And that's really, at the end of the day, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, and it's amazing. Whatever this guy touches turns into gold. I mean, the XFL, it first started, what, I don't know how many years ago it was, and it bombed out. Mm-hmm. Then they started again, COVID hits. He gets involved and says, hey, let's reach out. Let's think of creating it outside the box. Let's get with the CFL. Now they might have a global partnership. Yeah. And the XFL
dude buys it for money. $7.
Yeah, it's incredible. Absolutely incredible, man. That guy is business savvy. He's incredible. Then he's thinking of running for president, too. I mean, and he just came out with ZOA. I mean, The Rock is something else, man. That guy's just phenomenal.
I got to catch up on Young Rock.
Yeah.
But I'm a few episodes behind on that. But, yeah, I mean, it really is incredible. Everything that he's done pretty much coming from the bottom. And now he's the owner of a huge football franchise. Mm-hmm. And you're looking to actually make it mainstream and obviously multi millions of dollars in Hollywood movies and income there. So good stuff to come for Dwayne Johnson.
Absolutely.
All right. Without further ado, we are going to welcome in our next guest. And joining us now is actually one of the reasons why we're here right now. Fan Experience TV. She did play a big part. Help us welcome Denise Sack to the program. Denise.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Hi, Denise. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Great.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you on. So thank you for joining us. I know it's been a while. We finally got here. I mean, we're 74 episodes in now. And I do mention the fact that this time last year, I was obviously just starting out with growing, playing the field, and then meeting you at Game Plan U, like a couple of weeks from where we sit right now. And we were coming on to pitch on the investor pitches back in May. And at that point, I was like complete like introvert. And some of the things that when we had our talk, I kind of was able to relax a little bit. But now
look at you.
I feel a little bit more relaxed when I'm doing this. So I guess to the people that don't know, Denise is a mindful life coach. So I'm curious as to where that started. Where did you get that urge to sit there and help people with their mindset?
Yeah, so I'm trained as a therapist. I'm a mental health therapist the last 20 years of my life. And we had to move from Connecticut to Florida. And at that point, I had already started my mindful life coaching business, but it helped me kind of push me more into my organizational development and individual consulting practice. But it was about halfway through my career as a therapist, I felt like I was at the bottom of a river, kind of catching people who were falling in. And the more and more I was at the bottom of the river catching people, just kind of trying to pull them out, I started thinking to myself, why are they falling in the first place? What is going on in these people's lives that is preventing them from being able to swim or causing them to completely collapse and lose control of their life? And metaphorically, I kind of wanted to run upstream and find out what is going on in their lives. And that led me to, it was ironic because at the same time I was starting my yoga teacher.
Yep. Technical difficulties.
Okay. So she'll sign back in.
Yeah, that's amazing. So she kind of helped you guide, get you started doing the pod and the TV and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, she got me more comfortable with, I guess, being more comfortable with myself, I guess.
Yeah, you got to be comfortable being uncomfortable. That's what I've
been. She's back on. Let her,
there we go.
Have her finished.
Sorry about that.
Hey, I mean, we're live. Anything goes, right? Everything
happens all the time. Of course, it's going to happen at 9 o'clock at night. But yeah, so I just felt like I wanted to figure out what was going on for people that they weren't able to kind of manage their own life. And what I found was that they were lacking in coping skills and being able to manage stress and kind of getting pulled in 100 different directions. And the more technology was bombarding us with information, the more I felt like people were just losing their ability to focus in the present moment and not be scattered and distracted and constantly stressed. And I was, when I was going through my yoga teacher training, I was going through a difficult time in my life as well. My husband was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer. Mm. And I left yoga every weekend feeling better. And I was like, why do I feel better? My life shouldn't feel good right now because my life isn't in a good place right now. And what I started doing was researching about what happens in the brain when you actually practice yoga and practice mindful activities. And I learned that there's different parts of the brain that get activated when you practice yoga and meditative and mindful activities that actually calm you down. And I thought, this is really freaking cool. And I want to teach the students where I work how to do this. I want to teach faculty and staff at the university. I want to work with the teams. And so I started this program at the university around mindful life coaching. And that was kind of the beginning of everything there. And once we moved to Florida, I just dove in full time with Rob and Game Plan U and working with our founders on their mindset, because it doesn't matter whether you're in sports, whether you're a student, whether you're 70 years old, mindset is how you look at the world and how you operate. So I just work with whoever wants to learn about their mindset and work on their ability to show up to their day in a more effective way.
Yeah, no, and it's great. And we've had a couple of guests on that have dove into that field and working on mental illnesses such as depression, anxiety, and things like that. And it affects a lot more people than we think it does. And I just watched a movie the other day. And it was a line that stuck with me was, everyone has two monsters inside of them. Mm-hmm. And it's the empathetic and the creative or whatever. And then you have the other ones that are just all about bad thoughts, just negative thinking. And it's all a matter of the ones that you feed that end up taking over the other monster and just totally going down that path. Yeah. And is that somewhat of what you have seen with a lot of the people that you help?
No, absolutely. There are so many different features to mindfulness that one of them is becoming aware of the negative and critical thoughts that are racing through your mind at any given time. And I call it their gremlin. And so I'll say to them, all right, let's just talk about this gremlin right now and where that person came from. Because the other piece of this is we don't just all of a sudden wake up in the morning and become negative or become our own worst critic. It develops over time. And mm-hmm. we learn from experiences that we have. So you could have been in sixth grade and had an experience with a coach on a field that embarrassed you more than anything. And now you have a fear of being the center of attention or a fear of public speaking. And there's this critic that happens anytime you're put into the spotlight that's telling you you're not going to be okay, you're going to be embarrassed. And that belief system is what generates your mentality and your mindset and how you show up to your day. So that's what I want people to understand. So the way that I work my curriculum is helping them understand what that inner gremlin is. We give it a name. I'll say, who's talking to me right now? Is that Mike or is that his inner gremlin? And I'm like, I don't want to talk to the gremlin right now. You know, I want to talk to the person who's rational and is going to make some logical choices. And it helps kind of distinguish and separate yourself from the negativity that we have, because most of the time they're generated from faulty beliefs or negative experiences or embarrassing things that happened when we were younger that are no longer happening to us in the moment.
Yeah. Okay. But when I eat after midnight, I end up being a gremlin the next morning. So, so I like the use of the analogy of a gremlin.
Yeah.
Denise, the work you do is incredible. I'm curious, is everybody either as the people you come across, but is everybody in life at some point going to have moments like that where they just completely collapse? I mean, is that unavoidable, or is it going, no matter what's going to happen? Are those moments that's going to be there? Is that part of just living?
I guess the word collapse would be the word we need to define there. Everybody is going to have moments. Everyone is going, everyone's got their stuff they have to deal with. There is not a person on this earth that hasn't dealt with something negative in their life at some point, whether it's been a small t, lowercase t trauma, or something huge and a capital, you know, T trauma. But everybody's got their stuff, and everyone as a result of that has got their own triggers, and you can get set off at any given time in your life. And does it mean that everyone is absolutely inevitably going to have a complete breakdown? No, absolutely not. But we're all ineffective at times. There are times where I'm ineffective, where I get triggered by something that has probably little to do with the present moment, but is because of my own wiring and the things that kind of set me off and my gremlin inside of me making me kind of react in a particular way. And yeah, I'm gonna have those moments. So everybody has time, some of us more than others, when we're not kind of as skillful as we'd like to be. And that's what I want to try to help people figure out, is when they get triggered, can I do something about that? Can I do something different so that the next time this happens, I don't have that automatic reaction that makes me feel like a lunatic or out of control or grouchy or impatient or whatever it is.
Got it. And what are some of the things that you do with your clients to make them aware of these triggers? Or what are some of the exercises or some of the things that you go through with your clients?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different strategies that I use. I actually just finished a book it's like an eight-step series, and each of the steps has different activities in it. Some of them are writing activities, but at its core, I want people to understand that you have wiring inside of your brain that developed from a very young age. That wiring develops predispositions or a worldview about how you think of yourself and how you picture yourself compared to everyone else in the world, and also how you take in information from the world. So I try to help people through the strategies, through mindfulness, first of all, becoming aware of the present moment, and the present moment being what you can see, touch, taste, smell, and hear, but also what your thoughts are, what your emotions are, and what your body sensations are. So those eight things I want people to start becoming aware of so that they can understand how they're operating in the world and how they're responding to things. But I want them to understand, more importantly, that you have brain patterns that have developed. And when those neurons fire together in initial traumas or negative experiences, they wire together because there's a part of your brain that wants to protect you from being hurt ever again. Yeah. And so once bitten, twice shy, right? And there's a part of your brain that is hell bent on making sure that once you are bitten once, that is never going to happen again. Mm. And it could be with trust issues. It could be with control issues. It could be with respect issues. It could be jealousy. It could be anything. It doesn't have to be life or death. It could just be something negative that happened in your world. And if you can understand that that's one of your triggers, then you can know the times when you might be set off. You can understand the type of people that might set you off. And when you understand that, when you can predict when something might happen, then you can prepare yourself for it mentally. And I give people strategies for doing that as well. And that those strategies have to do with getting centered in your body and being right here in the present moment 100%, and not letting yourself go to the past or go to the future, which is where 99% of our distress comes from.
It's amazing.
Yeah, no, that's great, and that makes, you know, a ton of sense. So you said that you worked with the university, you worked with some, you know, students, and you worked with teams. So I know you ended up with the Game Plan U down the line, but is there something like when working with people, athletes or non-athletes, or people that like sports versus not like sports? I don't know if you were able to tell that with some of the clients. I don't know if you had just non-sports fans, but was there some kind of like common thing that goes on in certain people's brains as far as like the competitive nature that athletes just have naturally versus the ones that don't really have that?
Yeah, there's definitely a training that happens with athletic performance that doesn't necessarily happen in the general public. So you've got this mentality with sports where you're constantly reviewing what you're doing so that you can learn and grow. And that's what we call a growth mindset. So you don't get fixed in an ego state of embarrassment. I'm not good at that. I'll never be good at it. And in fact, I actually worked with a student who was on the track team, which I can tell you that story in a minute. But for the most part, most athletes have the mindset that no matter what, they can learn and they can grow. And that's a little bit different than the general public. So when I work with the athletes, they understood me a little bit better because they could get where I was coming from. And they knew more about kind of being in that flow and being in that peak state of right here, right now, this is all that matters. And they get a specialized training, especially as they're preparing to be better athletes over the course of their life, to do that and to be more mindful, which isn't necessarily the same with people who haven't practiced or studied or learned sports. But the same thing does happen with students who are artists or musicians, because there's a level of diligence that also goes along with that that can be very mindful. But I worked with a student once that was on the track team, and she gives me permission to talk about this, but she went through my mindfulness series and she was on the track team and she hated the hurdles. I mean, she was like, I suck at them. I can't stand them. And we were in one of the workshops and she was like, every time I go to practice, I'm worrying about the hurdles coming up. And so it ruins my high jump. It ruins the relay. It ruins everything because I'm so worried about the hurdles coming up. And so what I tried to do with her was say, okay, what are you thinking about? What is going through your mind? She said, I'm going to be embarrassed. The coach is going to kick me off the team. They're going to think I can't do other events because I can't do this one. And she was doing this kind of pillow piling thing, which is another activity I do with students and people who've gone through the training, is you start pillow piling. There's one issue. And then all of a sudden there's 50 other pillows on top of you that are negative thoughts, like that have nothing to do with, you're just making them up and you're adding them into the present moment and distracting yourself. So of course you're going to stink at the hurdles when you get there. You're telling yourself you suck at it. And in fact, of course, it's going to ruin every other experience you have too, because you're so distracted by thinking about the hurdles that you can't even focus on what you need to do to be successful in everything else. I said to her, let's get rid of all the pillows. And here's just your inability to do well at hurdles. And this was her freshman year. And I said, excuse my French, but I said, next time you go into practice, you're going to make the hurdles your bitch. I said, and you're going to tell yourself that you are, no matter what, you are going to crush it during the hurdles. And we practiced this mantra, this regimen of thought. And I said, I don't want you to think about anything else but diving in headfirst at the hurdles and getting zoned in on that performance, and then let go and just do it. She came back the next week or 2 weeks later and she said, I did really good. She said, I've never done this well in hurdles in my life. And I was so relaxed in practice, and the coach noticed it and other teammates noticed it. We finished the series out because we were kind of at the end of the series. She came back her junior year to take the program again because she really liked it, the mindfulness program. And she filled me in and she said the hurdles became her best event. And it was a thing that she was known for on the team, which I thought was really stinking cool, because it had nothing to do with her physical body and everything to do with what was going on in those 6 inches between her ears. So I love that story.
That's an incredible story.
No, that is absolutely incredible. And it's a testament. It really is. It's all about that mindset. It's really everything. You mentioned practicing some mantras. Are there certain mantras or even like quotes or something like that, that you like to share with your clients or just with yourself as far as just keeping your mindset in check?
So mantras, in my personal opinion, I feel like mantras are really personal. And so what's going to work for me and what's going to feel soothing or relaxing for me isn't necessarily going to be the same words for you. So I really talk with people about what their issue is or what they want to work on. And then if you're, you know, issue is impatience or frustration, then maybe you talk about peace and patience. Or if you're someone who is anxious, maybe the word calm is what you use for your mantra. And whatever it is that your issue is, I try to find the antonym of that struggle and go with that. That's usually what works best for people. In my opinion, that's what has worked best in the past.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Everyone's mind's in a different place, so you want to make sure you're attacking exactly what their problem is.
Yeah.
Denise, I was going to ask you, there could be people watching the show tonight who have, right, obviously some issues or going through some stuff. Is one of the keys, like you just said, attacking it head on, saying, I'm going to make this my bitch, I'm going to own this, and I'm going to overcome this? I mean, is that the key to overcoming whatever problem you can have in your life? Is that the main key right there?
It is the first key, right? Okay. It's awareness. If you don't know what you don't know, then you're not going to do anything to fix it. So it's not enough to know there's an issue, but it is important to know that there is one there, because that right there is the way that you're priming your brain for receptivity towards change. And if I know I have an issue, then I'm thinking, okay, I'm focusing on it. There's the issue. Now what? It's not enough to just have this insight that, oh, I'm claustrophobic because of A, B, and C, or I procrastinate because of what happened to me in third grade. That's great. But now we have to work on what you do when you're triggered in those moments. And how do you work through that? What are the strategies that you use to be able to take those next steps so that you don't continue the pattern? Because it's kind of like water coming down a pathway. Water is not going to look for a new path. It just finds the path of least resistance. That's exactly what happens in our brain. And until you start developing a new pattern, try to close off the old pattern, then nothing's going to change because the brain is lazy. And it doesn't want to look for a new pattern. You have to retrain it. And it's hard. I mean, it's really simple. The strategies are simple. It's like stopping the Nile River sometimes. You know what I mean? It's, you've been doing it for 25, 30 years. So now I'm asking you to walk down a different path in your brain. And that's going to take some practice. So if, awareness is the first step. And then it's, okay, now what?
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you about this. I think you touched on it a little bit earlier about social media. But what role is that playing in people dealing with problems and like the effects that it's having on people? Like, what role is social media playing in that?
Yeah, so I have to be really careful here because I live on social media.
We all do. Yeah, we're all there.
Do I have really strong opinions about it? Absolutely. I think the generations growing up now, I guess my main problem with it is that it's 24/7. Nothing ever turns off anymore.
Yeah.
If you were bullied, I was bullied in fourth grade and I used to get to go home and there was no more bullying. It just ended. I got on my bus, I went home and my life was fine. And there was no other friends talking about it. And I didn't know if I didn't get invited to a party. And I didn't know what other people were doing when I was home eating dinner with my family. And so there was this innocence and naivete back then that I think benefited us in a lot of ways. And I think the way that social media works right now is that it never stops. It can be completely overbearing. Your brain never gets to rest. And we have all of these fears about what other people are doing because we're, the way that advertising also works is it's constantly making us compare ourselves to other people because they just want to sell their product. If you don't feel good enough, if you don't feel pretty enough, if you don't feel smart enough, if you don't feel strong enough, then you need to buy this product or do this thing. And that is puts us in a constant state of just never feeling good enough. And so, of course, now you're comparing yourself to everybody else who took 50 pictures before that one perfect one came along. And so you're not even seeing reality. So I feel like there's just a lack of privacy. There's a lack of quiet time for the brain. And there's just this bombardment of 24/7 comparison and judgment and shoulds and have to's that I think just are overwhelming and we need a break from.
Yeah, I see. I'm with you on that. I think a lot of people like think that they see somebody's Instagram or somebody, they think that's reality. The reality is that's not real. It's just something like that somebody captured in the moment, but it's not real life. And I think that's contributing to our societal issues out here.
Absolutely. And marketing and advertising executives have become connoisseurs of chaos. Like they know how much to kind of bombard us to the point where we're overwhelmed and then we just impulse buy. And so we're all victims of it. And the more you think you're not a victim of that marketing and advertising, the more you are a victim of it. It's 24/7. I just think if people can take a step back from themselves and from their life and just kind of take a look at what's going on around them, take a couple deep breaths and just observe, then it just helps you understand yourself a little bit better and see how you're interacting with the world around you, with people, and really how you're talking to yourself and how you're operating in the world.
Yeah, I feel that a lot of people, especially younger, that grew up with only social media, I feel like they think there's a magic pill for everything. That and all these companies our marketing to that effect, saying, okay, yeah, this is going to do it. This is going to do it for you. This is going to do it for you. Absolutely. And even adults can't separate it sometimes.
Mm-mm.
They get sucked in. And I don't know if you watched The Social Dilemma.
I haven't watched it. I don't watch a lot of TV purposefully because I just...
Maybe don't. But really the gist of it was like all these CEOs and higher-ups and executives of said apps, Instagram and Facebooks and Twitters and whatnot, they don't even let their kids use it because they know what it does. And it's just like the constant notifications, the constant endorphin rushes that they're sending these people. And there's just people that just don't know how to separate it. And they just need that instant gratification. Now, let me ask you, have you ever, spoken with, I guess, maybe kids or like parents of children? Because me, myself, I'm a parent. And I feel as if the instant gratification culture is hampering kids to shut down when something gets too hard. And they don't know how to dig deep to try to figure out like the problem at hand. And they kind of want things handed to them a little bit more than I used to when I was a kid.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I just think there's a lack of coping skills that our youth today are dealing with more than other generations have before. I think there have been also generations where there's been this tough love, which is the other end of the spectrum, which I don't think is necessarily healthy. We've got to find this middle ground because so many children growing up now are so coddled and overprotected. And we have these helicopter parents making sure that no one ever gets a no and no one ever is upset and no one ever gets disappointed. And when you don't have that, then there's a sense of entitlement that happens. And when that sense of entitlement happens, you're going to be disappointed a lot because you just think everything should be given to you, handed to you. And that's putting a very big blanket over a huge generation of people. And I don't think all people and students and youth today are growing up that way, but it certainly is an issue in some respects, in a lot of respects. So just something to pay attention to. And I don't know that there's an easy answer right now because I don't think any of this is going away. And I think the way that our world works right now, as far as media and news, we are thriving on chaos and we are thriving on immediate gratification and we're thriving on negativity and judgment and comparison. And unless people are mindful, this is why I do the work that I do, because I really want people to learn how to take a step back and not get sucked into it because it's so easy and it's just so overwhelming.
Yeah, I think it's just so many factors at play. It doesn't necessarily have to be, because the parents could be doing exactly what they and trying to push them along those lines. You still have those social medias that exist. You still have the fact that you can watch a show on a full season. Meanwhile, back in the day, we had to wait a week for the next episode. And we have to watch commercials alongside it. And if you missed it, that's it. You missed the show. You had to be disciplined. You had to make sure you got your homework done on time just so you could be in front of the TV to watch that show at that designated time, or else that was it. You're never going to see it again. Maybe a couple of years from then on a rerun. But now I get it. Obviously, we get spoiled too as adults. Like, we have these Netflixes and the Hulus and Primes and whatever.
Yeah.
And it's great. I mean, I find myself cursing the high heavens because I'm watching the shows on Disney Plus, like the Mighty Ducks TV show I'm watching now. And it's only one episode a week. And then I have to wait a whole week. And I'm like, what is this? But I'm spoiled. But if somebody that actually lived through the whole, you have to wait a week, and now I have to wait a week again, and I'm being affected by it, what do you think these kids that only have known that? So that's where that instant gratification really plays a factor. So I just want to move on to game plan you a little bit. And obviously you were working with a couple of teams at the university. So what drove you to want to help out in like the sports tech startup space with game plan you? Like, what did you see that you really wanted to like dig deep and get your hands dirty with those founders?
Yeah, so I've known Rob Thompson forever, and we were on different career paths, but we always knew each other and would talk about our work together at different points in our lives. And he was talking about Game Plan U with me over the course of a few months. And we had, like I had said, moved down to Florida, and he was having his first when you could have live events, which is so sad to think about. He had his first live event in January of 2020. And he said, hey, can you go down and check out the venue for me? Because he was up in Connecticut. I said, sure. I went down. I spoke with the gentleman at USTA and said it sounded great. And he was like, can you help me out with some stuff? And I said, sure. And then we were talking about mindset. And he was like, it might be really helpful because these founders are really stressed. And I feel like it might be kind of cool if you come in and talk about some of your stuff with them, because it'll kind of look at the business side of things from a different angle, from a kind of psychological angle. And do you want to do a session at the weekend? And I said, sure. And then after that, everything just felt right. And he said, hey, do you want to join me and be a partner in this and help me kind of move forward with Game Plan U and our founders, and meeting people like you and Andrew and Max and Danny and Ashley? It's just been so much fun. And I've learned so much. I did not know about sports technology at all, but I just love all of the different startups that all of you founders bring to Game Plan U community. And it's been so much fun. I feel like we just have a really neat community of founders and mentors and career seekers that are working together in this really supportive environment that has been a lot of fun. And yeah, that's kind of it.
Yeah.
What are some of the qualities or some of the attributes that you've learned from the founders that they all have in common? What's the thing about entrepreneurs that sets them apart from the right? I guess the person who's not an entrepreneur or who wants to be an entrepreneur thinks, what is it that sets them apart?
It is passion to solve a problem that they see in the world. But beyond that, this mentality of just being able to take it on. I worked for 20 years in university, this cushy little job. I'd go to my office. I had a regular paycheck, health insurance every 2 weeks. And if I thought about starting a business on my own, terrified. Little would I know that 20 years down the road, I'd start my own consulting business. But because of the work I do with Game Plan U, founders are an amazing group of people who are not afraid to take something on, to solve a problem, and to work 24/7 with the weight of the world on their shoulders. That is a unique group of people. And so my hat's off to all the founders in the world, and much respect, especially to the people that I know in our community, because they're 24/7. It never stops. And that's why the mindfulness is so important, to help them kind of take some of the stress off, relax a little bit.
That it's incredible. It's incredible work. I mean, just talking to you for the last 40 minutes or so, it's been incredible to listen. I mean, I can go on for another hour. It's so fascinating. But so where do you see your work going? I mean, are you going to continue to work with entrepreneurs, athletes? Like, where would you like your business to go moving forward?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I feel like right now, I've been working with Game Plan U, I'm moving in more of a corporate world right now. I'm doing consulting with different organizations. I go in once a month consulting with Yale Medicine, and I do mindful workshops for the employees there. And I've worked with a couple of other organizations and with the CEOs and doing management training and with Game Plan U and the founders there. But there's this other side of me that just loves working with young adults and children. And I think that's probably going to be more of the philanthropic piece of the work that I do. Just going in and working with kids at a young age to help them just learn some basic mindfulness. I really want to flourish that part of my work. I want to get my book published, and I would love to have the book be used for therapists in training, so that they learn these strategies and they can help their clients with it. I'd love to have an online course with a slimmed down version of the book so that therapists can kind of teach the information themselves, or I can teach an online course. I'm a little bit all over the place.
That's a great point. That's a great attitude.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to ask this. I don't want to lose my train of thought here. Are we as a society just so overwhelmed, social media. I mean, as Americans, I mean, we're like the most, I think we're like we, I think sometimes we're over-medicated. We eat terribly. Is it just that we're just so overwhelmed with whether it's work or social media or what's just going on with it? Is that what's contributing to a lot of these like depressions and the issues that we're having? Is that we're just so bombarded information and overwhelmed and just like that we can't handle it? Like as humans, we just can't take it.
I do think that's a huge piece of it for sure. That in addition to the fact that people don't have coping skills. We're not taught about mental health when we're in first, second, third grade. We don't know what's wrong in our families when we're that age because we've never seen anybody else's family, and lots of families struggle. Lots of families have poor coping mechanisms. You're taught time and time again, how to prevent a cold, how to stay healthy, wash your hands, eat an apple, go to the doctor. But no one ever talked about mental health and stress and how to manage it. That, in addition to the fact that life has gotten so quick, I mean, it's just immediate. It is constant. It is that bombardment that you're talking about. And let's add a whole other level of dysfunction on top of it with our news and our media being divisive and hateful towards each other. And there is no compassion anymore in the world. There is a ton of compassion. There is no compassion shown on TV with our news. There is much more compassion than there is evil in this world. I truly believe that. But you're not going to see that when you turn on any TV station because it's all about chaos and it's all about grabbing someone's attention. And the way you do that is being the most loud, the most obnoxious, the most scary, or the most dangerous, because that's how you're going to get viewership. Otherwise, you're not relevant.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I feel also if schooling, there was curriculums, like you would learn kindergarten, you would have to learn your ABCs first, and then you would learn how to read words, and then you would learn how to read sentences. Mm-hmm. And if you were reading a book, you want to go chapter one, chapter two. But now, because the technology is just so in your face and it's there, people are getting shown the back of the book, or they're getting shown 10th grade stuff right in their face. And then they're going to, how do you get to that? Like, how do you understand how to do that? You have to go through the first 9 grades and then it makes more sense. But when it's all just in your face and you're seeing all these people like, wait, you know, that guy made $1 million off of that, or that guy made, this person just had 1 billion views on their YouTube. But like, how do I do that? Because they work their way up to that. It's not just like this overnight success. And people think that it's this thing that just happened overnight and they just got super lucky.
Yeah. They're not seeing the process and the hard work that goes into it at all. And I also think that there's just this level of disconnection that people just aren't connected. We're just like cut off from the head up and like robots, and people don't ever settle into the moment to just kind of relax for 5 minutes. And we're not shown process in terms of how to take care of yourself. We're not shown that it takes work to be healthy. It takes work to think healthfully. And when something bad happens, you need a corrective emotional experience to be able to work through it so that you can change the mindset that may have been developed in that moment. And if you're not getting that, then nothing's going to change. And you just continue with the dysfunction over time, which can snowball into really negative patterns for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it keeps going on to that like magic pill type of thinking. And it just, that just, some people just think it exists. But I mentioned luck, and today's the 13th, where, you know, 13's my lucky number, whether that means anything or not. But what have you ever seen anything as far as maybe it's numbers, maybe it's other types of superstitions, something like the people that you've talked to and like this crazy obsession over a certain routine or a number or something that just pushes them along their path and got them to where they are as far as their mindset?
Definitely a lot of athletes that I've spoken with have routine around their process. And I think that serves them well because they're able to walk through a series of steps that helps them to repeat the same thing, that muscle memory that allows them to be successful. And a lot of leaders have the same thing. They wake up in the morning, CEOs, people who are successful, just have this operating system that they work from every single day, whether it's maybe not so much a number or something along those lines, but this is what I do in the morning when I wake up. The first thing I do before I get out of bed is I am rolling over and I'm taking a few deep breaths and I'm just noticing my body in this moment. That's just one of my main things that I do. And then I have my mindfulness and my meditation and my reflection time, and then I'm off and running. But I do think that routine and mindset from the minute you get up in the morning is critically important to set your day off in the right place. Because if you get up in the morning and you tell yourself, I hate mornings, today's going to suck, I hate my job, my boss is an idiot, then you are not in the right mindset to be successful. And you're going to look for information that's going to validate all of those negative thoughts. By the contrary, I try to teach people, let's come up with a better mindset, a better story, a better way of talking to yourself so that you can get yourself into the right state of mind and practice it every single day.
Yeah. And I feel as if you just have to, sometimes what works for me is if there's something that I have to get done, and sometimes I'll say, oh, I'll do it in the morning. But if I do it like before I go to bed, then like I wake up in such a, like a much better mood, or else I'm a gremlin for the rest of the day.
We have to name your gremlin, Mike.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I like Mogwog Mike better than Gremlin Mike. But let's talk a little bit about, obviously, through Game Plan, you also developed Mindset Mondays, where you're interviewing CEOs, founders, about their mindset and pretty much how they came along. How are you liking doing the Mindset Mondays with all these founders?
I love it. I'm really having a good time with it. It's been a lot of fun. And I spent my entire career interviewing people. I mean, I sat in a chair and I asked people 8 million questions about what's going on inside their head so that I could understand how they're operating in the world. So I can sit and listen to someone and they say a few phrases, they'll use a word a few times over the course of our discussion. I'm thinking, okay, note to self, let's bring that back into the conversation. So it's easy for me to sit and talk and draw information from people. And my goal is to just really understand how they operate as a founder, what makes them successful, how they overcome challenges, what, you know, may have gotten in their way and how they work through it. Because to your point before, Mike, a lot of people just see someone being successful and they think, oh, look at Mike Katos. He's got this amazing podcast and this is awesome. And look at him. And I wish I could do something like that. I don't know how to do that. How do I? And they have no idea what your process was over the months where you were thinking about it, figuring it out, trial and error, working and iterations along the way. And that's what I want people to understand, is that life is a process. Life is challenges. Life is falling down and getting back up. And I just want people to learn that you just need to get back up one more time, then you fall.
Yeah. Just an FYI, if I watch episode one now, I want to vomit.
I love it.
Final one from me, Denise. You are a big UConn fan. For our viewers who watch, she is a big UConn fan. Tell us about the shot.
Oh. Yeah, that was so fun in 1990, right? Yeah. I was on campus when Huskies, I think it's still considered on campus. I don't even know if Huskies is open anymore. But when I went to UConn, Huskies was like, Huskies and Ted's were the place to be when there was anything going on sports related or just on a Thursday night. Okay. I was there and it was shoulder to shoulder packed. And this was when UConn was just like getting on the map. So there was just this electric feeling on campus because they were just making their way and they're playing Clemson and they had 1 second left. So I'm standing with my friends and everybody's got their pitchers of beer and just hanging out. And I looked over at my friend and I was like, I don't think they're going to do it. Can they do this? They've got 1 second left. So Scott Burrell's behind the line and thinking, how the hell is he going to throw this ball down the court? He played football and baseball in high school. So I went to high school with him, actually. We're friends. I knew him my whole life. And so I was like, okay, I know he can throw the ball. What's going to happen? He throws it to Tate George and he had to catch it perfectly. So Scott had to throw it perfectly. Tate George had to catch it perfectly and be close enough to the rim to be able to get the shot off. And he did. And it sunk. And when I tell you the roar in Huskies probably was heard throughout the entire campus and probably stores in general, I was soaking wet because there was beer everywhere. Everybody's pitchers went up in the air. And then they played the shot probably 10 times it after that, just showing it over and over again. And with every replay, it was as if it was happening for the first time. So it was just the most exciting place to be. And I loved watching basketball anyway. But that moment for me was like, I am hooked. UConn, obviously I was a UConn student, so I loved them, but it was just, it was one of the best moments that I've ever had as a sports fan, for sure.
There it is, a great college moment.
Yeah.
Thank you, Denise.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. This was great.
For a sports show, we didn't talk much on sports because everything else was, you know, just so exciting and so interesting. And, but I do want you to tell people where to find you and a little bit more about your program that you did not mention yet. Just tell everyone how they can contact you and find your curriculum.
Yeah, so you can find me on LinkedIn. Just put Denise Zack. It's Z-A-C-K with a K. A lot of people like to use an H, but it's a K. My website is DeniseZackLifeCoach.com. You can also email me at Denise@GamePlanU.org. So those would be the main places, or DZ Mindful Coach on Instagram.
Perfect. It was it's always a pleasure.
Yeah.
And
thanks for having me.
You're always welcome on the show anytime that you want.
Thank you
very much for coming on. It was an absolute
thanks for having me. Yeah, this was great. Thank you again. I really appreciate it.
Anytime,
have a great night.
No problem.
All right, guys. Take it easy. Bye bye. Right.
Bye.
That was great. Now I could have got another hour.
I know. I mean, there's, I mean, so much that we could talk about. I mean,
yeah. Oh, it's, you know, I want to ask her what CEO does she want to.
She's still backstage.
Oh,
if she's okay with wanting to answer the question.
No,
what's the question?
No, it was just she interviewed CEOs, but what major Fortune 500 or big time CEOs out there that she would want to sit with for an hour and interview and just pick their brain? I wanted to ask her that.
You want to put in your two cents, Denise?
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
Probably Jeff Bezos.
Wow. Yes.
Yeah. I because there's a lot there. There's a lot of information there. There's a lot of just a lot of stuff in his world that I would love to just pick his brain about his success, but also just about a lot of the controversy of his world and just being in the limelight like that. I feel like he would be the one. So. Yeah,
I feel like I would pick Elon Musk because such a guy. It's just
he's so
interesting.
Interesting, so different. That might get really bizarre, but
yeah, that one might be a little bit confusing.
You might end up in a shuttle to the moon. After that.
I don't think you could actually keep up. You have to go on a different wavelength to try and keep up with the, you know, whatever is going on in his mind. I mean,
yeah,
you know, he just thinks about things differently than most people. And,
yeah, which is probably has to.
That's why he is where he is.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for the encore.
This time. You're welcome. Take care.
All right.
Yeah. Bye. I'm leaving.
Okay. Bye.
There you go. Bye. All right. There it is. Yeah.
All right.
This is supposed to be a good one, man. See, guys like Musk, there's one trait in their head that they don't have, and it's fear. Like, they don't care. They're like, whatever.
And that's the key,
That's the key, man. Like, caring. Like, caring about opinions, that's the key.
I have definitely grown over this, like, last year. Just not caring. I feel like a big thing that held me back from even starting this show was caring too much.
Yeah.
And then every episode cared less and less, and I just cared about, is it fun? Do I enjoy it?
And
that's it. And that's the only opinion that matters.
Like, honestly,
we're
doing the show. I don't even think about, like, viewers or whatever. So we're doing the show, dude. To me, like, you're watching, great. You get an opinion, great. Who cares? Tuesdays and Thursdays, we're going to say what we feel, and that's pretty much it.
We have good, you know, conversations with everyone that comes on here. Yeah. And every conversation ends up going way longer than we anticipate. Yeah. And then we still know that we can go another half hour, an hour with that.
I mean, listen, man, who would be a great person to get on here? The Rock. I want to get his mentality, his mindset.
The Rock says.
Yeah. As the Yankees are down 6-3 in the
– they're catching up, though. Anything on the
– on the Mets? Hold on, say right now.
Metropolitans here, 3-0.
Awful. Yeah, 3-0 Mets.
How'd they score? Anything here? 2 hits, 2 RBIs for Nimmo. So that could be a home run type of deal.
The Yankees are awful. They're not very good.
VR, another RBI. He had the walk-off. So he had one run, one hit, one RBI. So could be a home run there.
Okay.
As well, Nemo did not score any runs, but had two RBIs. So definitely not a home run on his end.
There you have it.
Google, the Google standings is weird. It doesn't really have a
person. It doesn't update on right away.
It doesn't like have a play-by-play type of thing. It just has the box score.
Yeah. So wanted to touch on some news and notes real quick in the NBA. I don't know if you saw this. Jamal Murray tore his ACL last night in like a freak play. He's going in for a Red Sox 7 wins.
I'm going to take a wild guess that this is Mr. Andrew Nauher. And if it is, thank you very much for it was great. And thank you very much and for all the support and everything like that. And you know what? Red Sox 7 in a row. Congratulations.
They started 0-3.
And they're in first place. I mean, crazy. But thank you for watching the show,
thank you, as always. But I want to talk about Jamal Murray tearing his ACL, going in for a layup against the Warriors yesterday, and goes up in his knee. Thank you, Andrew. We appreciate it. His knee just buckles and tears his ACL out for the season. That's just horrible, man. Terrible. Mm-hmm. On the locals, our beloved Knicks, 500, getting there, getting close to a playoff berth. So we got about 20 games left in the season. I'll be watching every one of them, and a couple of more jerseys are inbound. But the Knicks are making some noise. And then the Nets, man, that talk about chaos. Do you know that Kyrie, James Harden, and Kevin Durant have only played 7 games together this year? Like, it is just – I don't know how they're winning over there, but it's like a disaster over there. Kind of, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Who would have thought that?
Yeah. But I still think it's going to be them and the Lakers in the finals. And,
I mean that has to be the smart choice there.
Yeah,
that has to be the smart choice. But yeah, 3-0 Mets over here.
Yeah, the Metropolitan
7 hits. That's fun to see.
The Met lineup is stout.
Dude, the Mets like offense has been pretty abysmal.
Yeah, what they did with DeGrom was a travesty in his last outing. I mean, if there's one pitcher who can probably win 300, if he was on a team that had like got him some runs when he pitched, he'd win 300 games. I mean, he's just that dominant. He's that good. At least I think.
Now you also got this new. If there's a rain out and a doubleheader the next day, it's 7-7.
Yeah,
they're playing 7 in games. Like those are the games you want. LeBron, DeGrom. I mean, pretty much King DeGrom, King LeBron is the same difference. He's the best pitcher in the game, in my opinion. But he can go 7. He can go complete games, and there should be no even thought of going into the bullpen for him if he had to pitch one of those doubleheader type of games.
Oh, we didn't touch on this. Alex Rodriguez has bought the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yep.
And Anthony Edwards, who's the best player on that team, when asked, said, "I don't know who that is. I know he's going to be the owner, but I don't know anything about baseball." Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
guess he doesn't know that he's engaged to J-Lo.
Yeah. Are they back together? Because they.
Yes.
Yeah. Together. Okay. So that was like. Was that just like fake news?
No, I think they've been having issues.
Okay, all right. Either way, congratulations to A-Rod for finally getting a team.
Finally.
But thank you very much for letting Steve Cohen have the Mets. I know it was all because A-Rod bowed down, but
exactly.
Yeah, it had nothing to do with money. Yeah. But yeah, we're happy with Mr. Cohen. And we all obviously wish the best for A-Rod and his new venture. And he's a great businessman, so he's gonna do great stuff. And obviously J-Lo, she's a great businesswoman as well, so she knows what they both know what they're doing. And we would love to have both of you on. So
yeah,
I know you guys are watching right now.
Yeah. So by the way, who plays first base for the Mets? Is that Pete Alonso over there?
It depends.
It looked like Pete Alonso over there who didn't make a play right there at first. But
well, Pete Alonso is the first
base. Yep, it's Pete Alonso.
He's playing first base right now, yeah.
Yeah.
But they alternate him and Dom Smith, but also Dom Smith is playing left field.
So it's usually going to be Pete Alonso. He loves to
make a play right there. That was a double play. That
he's not. He's not very. He's not very good with.
Oh, this guy in the defense. Door, something else, and there it is, 6'4"
All right.
There you go. Strowman threw six strong, and he's jacked up.
Yeah. Now he's had a good beginning of the season, so. But hopefully we can keep that going. And hey, and we're still down Carrasco and Syndergaard. I mean, if they can try and take, you know, the Mets are trying to give tickets away for this Philly series right now.
Yeah. Listen, man, it's still chilly out. I mean, you know.
I know. I was thinking about going tomorrow, but I just
colder out.
I just got, you know, too much going on. But yeah. I'll go in May. No, I'm going in May. I'm going to start
like getting a little more active once I get my second shot next week. Once I get my shot.
Is it next week? That's
when next Wednesday go. I get that second Pfizer shot. So the way I look at it is it's on a Wednesday. I think Thursday I'm just gonna be pretty much out for most of the day. Uh-huh. And then on Friday, that's pretty much it. So
well, I got my second one and it was a lot of arm soreness but you know, for the most part was not too bad. Drink a lot of water. If anyone out there has not, you know, had it yet, just make sure you just stay hydrated and definitely move it around and whatnot, and you'll be good to go. I think I over-exacerbated it. I was lifting my daughter up and down and spinning her every which way around because she wants to play. So I think I might have just pushed her too much, but don't do that. If you can avoid it, definitely do, but definitely hydrate, and you'll be okay.
By the way, did you see this? So the Broncos, the Bucks, and I think it's the Seahawks aren't taking part in these OTAs.
I did not see.
Yeah, I'm just reading that the Bucks won't take part in off-season workouts because of the
COVID.
Yeah, I think so. Hold on.
I saw something about Russell Wilson holding some vaccine thing.
Yeah, let's see. They're group professionals. Welcome. Negotiate. But in light of the ongoing pandemic, we are choosing to take a stand with other players across the league and exercise our right not to participate in lawsuits. We have fully virtual offseason last year. And we held each other accountable. Do the work. So, because of the pandemic still going on, they don't want to go back to work. But some of them are still hesitant to take the vaccine. So I don't know what they're talking about there. But you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just get your shots, folks. It's not that bad. You go get your shots. We can go get behind this and get back to normal. So,
yeah, the Russell Wilson and Ciara are hosting a COVID vaccine awareness special Sunday night.
Oh, that should be good. I think Dwayne Johnson's going to be there. Yeah, Barack Obama. Yeah. You think Russell get a shot on? Shaq's going to be on that too. Maybe they'll get the vaccine on TV.
I don't know. Maybe. It could possibly be that. But thank you, everyone, for joining us. Do we have any other news and notes?
No, I think we covered it all.
Tomorrow is Pete Rose's 80th birthday.
Wow, happy birthday, Pete.
And we will be back on Jackie Robinson Day.
Oh, yes.
We will be back on Thursday, Jackie Robinson Day. You know, big day, obviously, and for many different reasons. It also would be tax day, but this year it's, man, what? I should have.
You didn't pay your taxes?
No, I didn't. I did them already. But no, I was going to ask Denise about the mindset about people when post-COVID and how it really was a culture shock to a lot of people. But it is on her. She does have some techniques that help you know, deal with COVID-related stress on DeniseZackLifeCoach.com. So go to check that out and then reach out to her and she'd be happy to help. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. It was a great show. We learned a lot. So definitely the key is, you know, if you're dealing with something, just try to figure out and try and be more aware of why things are going on. And that's how you know to attack it. And don't feed your gremlin negative.
And what Denise said, man, make it your bitch, bro. Make it your bitch. Take that challenge on and overcome it. And everything else will work itself out.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, everyone. We've talked to your off long enough.
Yeah.
It's time for us to call the quits for tonight, and we'll see you on Thursday night for Jackie Robinson night. Have a good night, everyone.
Peace, everybody.
Bye-bye.